As expected, warmer weather is bringing some flooding. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has the statewide flood outlook. Flathead reporter Ketchum Fry updates us on the ongoing flood danger. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with the chief of Missoula County Search and Rescue Team about how you can keep safe when recreating in Montana's great outdoors. Warmer temperatures and rainfall are causing widespread flood problems, especially in Ravalli County. County Emergency Management Coordinator Ron Nicholas says the Florence area is the most hard hit.
Any ditches that exist and whatnot are full. They're overrunning. Roads are being washed out to a degree, and there's standing water on a lot of them. People are having trouble, you know, even getting to their homes.
Nicholas says flooding is reported in almost every community in Ravalli County. Local fire stations have sandbags and sand available. Missoula County appears to be faring a little better. Emergency Management Director Chris Lounsbury says so far the flooding is not causing any major problems or road closures.
Right now it's not particularly severe. We are having a couple of different reports from folks. Most of them seem to be from the south part of town. We've had a few in the Blue Mountain area that have been reported and also some down in the Florence area. In town, we're really just continuing to see that snow melt storm drain backup that's causing flooding around occasional roadways.
Missoula County, meanwhile, is offering unfilled sandbags to residents who can purchase sand from a number of local vendors.
Homeowners who are experiencing a fair amount of snow melt now, of course, the temperatures have warmed up. Sandbags can be effective if they have water flowing on their property from diverting it around their foundations. We have had a couple of folks who've had some water into crawl spaces, and so the county went ahead and made sandbags available today. They're unfilled sandbags out at the County Public Works Department on Training Drive, which is just west of the Missoula Airport on Highway 10.
Lounsbury says overnight freezing will help to slow the melting. Anyone who sees an area of flooding concern is urged to call 911 or they can call 552-6360. Meanwhile, Mount Sentinel has reopened to the public and the voluntary evacuation advisory for homes at the base of Mount Jumbo has been lifted. However, Mount Jumbo itself remains closed to the public. And in Lolo, sewer district personnel are asking all residents to refrain from taking showers, flushing toilets, or draining any other non-critical fluids to reduce flows to the main lines. Crews working to bypass these lines expect to be finished by 10 p.m. tonight. In the meantime, they ask drivers to avoid the 1,000 to 1,700 blocks of Lakeside Drive while they work.
The State Disaster and Emergency Services Department says some other localized areas are flooding as well. Emergency declarations have been called in Lewis and Clark County and the cities of Livingston and East Helena. There are also reports of water slowing traffic on I-90 between Butte and Bozeman. Disaster and Emergency Services Administrator Ed Tinsley says the department has not seen any requests for services regarding these floods, but they are monitoring closely. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has the story.
What a difference a week makes.
If you were traveling during the winter storm last week, my advice was to stay with your vehicle if you went off the road. And now my advice is to not drive through any standing water that you see.
Ed Tinsley with Disaster and Emergency Services says floodwaters are progressing as anticipated, considering the rapidly changing weather conditions.
Coupled with the fact that a lot of the ground is frozen, so there's no ability for the ground to absorb any of the melt.
He suggests to people who live in flood-prone areas, it's not too early in the season to prepare sandbags.
Fill some sandbags and bring them home and just set it up so you have your place protected.
He also asks people, particularly in rural areas, to make sure nearby culverts are cleaned out.
That's one of the biggest deals, is a plugged culvert will create a situation that doesn't need to be created. And sometimes it could even take a road out.
Other state agencies have also issued warnings related to the floods. Chief Counsel with the State Commissioner of Securities and Insurance, Jesse Laslovich, reminds property owners to consider buying flood insurance. He says it does not come standard with most insurance plans, and it takes 30 days to go into effect. Laslovich says the commissioner's office issues these reminders every year, although not usually until spring.
In light of the last couple of weeks, we figured we'd do this sooner rather than later.
And the Montana Department of Environmental Quality urges people in flooded areas with private wells not to drink from those wells without speaking with local health officials. Greg Butts works with DEQ's Public Water Supply Program. He says those wells could become contaminated.
Our recommendations are, of course, if you notice that, to find a different source of water, some bottled water. It could take some time before the water recedes enough to be able to get in and disinfect and flush out a well.
And it could take some time before Montanans can stop thinking about these issues. Montana snowpack tends to peak around mid-April. It's after that flooding season usually begins in earnest. I'm Dan Boyce reporting in Helena.
And in other news from around the state, for the second time in a week, BNSF Railway's main line across the northwestern Montana is closed after several avalanches came down on the tracks between Essex and Marias Pass. BNSF spokesman Matt Jones said today it has ended all rail traffic in the area due to the threat of continued slides in the area south of Glacier National Park. The railroad has acquired a permit from park officials to use a compressed air cannon to trigger slides and reduce future threats between Essex and West Glacier to clear the tracks. Jones says it's unclear how long the rail line will be blocked. Beginning late Sunday, the tracks were closed for about 12 hours while a slide covered the tracks with nearly 7 feet of snow and debris. Amtrak spokesman Mark Magliari says the railroad continues to bus passengers between stations in Shelby and Whitefish.
Much of western Montana is sitting under a high avalanche danger warning, but the snowpack differs from region to region, mountain to mountain, and even aspect to aspect. Flathead reporter Catherine Fry talks with the interim director of the Flathead Avalanche Center about its first year so far.
The phrase is that unusual conditions breed unusual avalanches, and that certainly seems to be the case there.
Eric Peitsch is talking about the recent avalanche in Missoula on Mount Jumbo. But these unusual conditions are apparent in many areas of western Montana. Things like poor snow, weak layers, wind loading, ice, and heavy snow create some of the instability avalanche specialists are seeing. Peitsch took the reins at the Flathead Avalanche Center at the beginning of the season. It's been busy.
We've had unusual periods throughout the winter where we've had weak layers that have, we call them persistent weak layers, they stick around for a while.
The Flathead Avalanche Center covers an area encompassing more than 3,300 square kilometers, including mountain ranges in the Flathead National Forest, Glacier National Park, and it also puts out information on avalanche conditions received from the Kootenai National Forest. That persistent weak layer Peitsch is talking about dates back to late January.
We had relatively warm and mild temperatures in the mountains, and it was sunny. We had a high-pressure system, you know, it was warm and sunny. So what that did is create a crust, so an ice crust, on the surface at the time. And, you know, not on all aspects, but sunny aspects.
Then it got cold.
And during that cold spell, we basically, that surface snow, it basically became weak and what we call faceted. And facets are weak snow. And that surface snow became weak, and then we basically started putting more snow on top of that weak snow with new storms.
Peitsch says the area went through a natural and then a human-triggered avalanche cycle. Most slides were failing on that weak layer, 1.5 to 3 feet down in the snowpack.
That layer has been problematic, and it still exists. You know, it's deeper in the snowpack, so it's becoming harder to affect and harder to trigger. But now that we're getting this wet, heavy snow, you know, we're worried about this wet, heavy snow in and of itself, so what we call storm slab. But we put this new weight on top of that old layer, and there's a lot of uncertainty right now as to how that layer may react.
The Flathead Avalanche Center is issuing a backcountry avalanche warning for the entire advisory area, including the Whitefish Range, Swan Range, Flathead Range, and portions of Glacier National Park. Continued snow, rising temperatures and snow levels, and strong winds have created highly unstable conditions.
The Flathead Avalanche Center normally issues avalanche advisories on Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. This special advisory was posted Thursday morning. Peitsch says they've put out several special advisories due to changing conditions and hazards. The avalanche danger for the Flathead region currently stands at high.
So the snowfall amounts aren't actually that impressive, but the problem is that in just a little bit of snow, we're getting a lot of water within that snow, and the weight of the water is really what matters when we load the existing snowpack.
The Flathead Avalanche Center hosts a community avalanche awareness meeting tonight at 6:30 at the Moose Lodge in Whitefish. Peitsch says it's a time to hear a synopsis of the season, talk about what's happening at the center, and find out more about the recently created Friends of the Flathead Avalanche Center. Peitsch urges people to keep sending in reports of what they're seeing in the backcountry, as the more data the center has to create its advisories, the better they'll be. Catherine Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Missoula County officials say a transient whose body was found in a train yard in Missoula died from injuries consistent with being hit or dragged by a slow-moving train. The sheriff's office announced the findings today after medical examiners at the state crime lab completed an autopsy of 34-year-old Keith Byington. Byington's body was discovered near the tracks just before noon on Tuesday. Sheriff spokeswoman Paige Pavilone says Byington was at least dragged by a train. Missoula Police Sergeant Travis Welsh says foul play hasn't been ruled out, and the investigation into Byington's death still continues. It's not clear when Byington died, but Welsh says police believe he was alive on February 28th.
Montana Attorney General Tim Fox says subsidiaries of Johnson & Johnson have agreed to pay nearly $6 million to settle a lawsuit with the state over the marketing of an antipsychotic drug.
We wish that companies would not misrepresent their products in a way that harms our citizens, but when they do, we're going to hold them accountable.
Fox says proceeds from the settlement will go to create a program to prevent prescription drug abuse.
This will be a multifaceted program involving outreach to schools and students, a public awareness campaign on the dangers of addiction and ways to prevent prescription drugs from falling into the hands of people who shouldn't have them, identifying where prescription drug drop-off locations are most needed and looking for ways to get them there.
Fox also includes money to connect addicts with resources to help in recovery, to help dispose of unused prescription drugs, and to prepare upcoming legislative proposals. Money also will go to the Montana Mental Health Trust, Consumer Protection Education, and to reimburse the State Department of Public Health and Human Services. Montana's 2008 lawsuit against Janssen Ortho LLC and Janssen Pharmaceuticals claimed the companies hid the dangers of Risperdal. Attorneys for the state say the companies knew the drug had the potential to cause weight gain, diabetes, and complications to the brain's blood vessels in the elderly. The companies admit no wrongdoing in the settlement, which was signed February 16th.
A $2.4 million gift from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation will launch a statewide project to help better prepare Montana students for college. The gift follows a pilot project at UM that used the Montana Digital Academy to test an online curriculum funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation called EdReady. Academy Executive Director Robert Curry says the curriculum helps students improve their math and English skills.
The project really is aimed at students from grade 7 all the way through higher ed. So any student in that age range in the state of Montana would be eligible to establish an EdReady account and use the tool to prepare for either upper-level high school classes or to prepare to enter the university system.
Curry says the curriculum helps students avoid the need to take remedial courses.
Students that participated voluntarily in the pilot at the University of Montana last summer were able to bypass 150 credit hours of coursework that they might normally have had to take had they not improved their mathematics entrance test scores by at least a level that was above the developmental math course level. So in essence, it moves them into credit-bearing mathematics that can be part of their major program rather than having to take, say, a three-hour developmental class, which would not apply.
For more information about the project, go to the website edready.org.
As a member of Missoula County's search and rescue team for 6 years, and currently its chief, Joshua Herbold has been involved in dozens of rescues and recoveries. But even for this veteran, last Friday was unique for Herbold's team. A first-ever residential avalanche rescue followed immediately by two skiers lost near Missoula Snowball. All three avalanche victims were rescued. One later died. Both skiers were rescued and survived. In his day job, Herbold is an associate professor of accounting at the University of Montana. In this feature interview, Herbold talks with news director Sally Mock about why he volunteers for the search and rescue team and his advice for how to avoid needing the team's services.
All of our volunteers have different reasons, but for most of us, it's a desire to help the community. And this is a way in which we can do that and use some of the skills that we want to get better at. You know, for me, it was I wanted to volunteer somewhere, but I didn't want something that was my day job. And so I didn't want to do accounting. I didn't want to, you know, we have actually some great students who volunteer to help people with their taxes. And that's great, but I didn't want to do that. I wanted to get away from that. So this was about as far away from my day job as I could get.
That's for sure. And of course, all of the volunteers go through training. It's not like you just show up and say, I've got the skill and trust me, I'm good at it.
Right. And actually, we have a pretty good recruiting process now. We admit about 4 to 5 people every 6 months if we can. And then we train, of course, the new folks train alongside the older, more experienced members. We all do trainings together. We have at least 2 training events every month. And then we train everybody on all the different skills that they need. You know, nobody has to. In fact, I didn't have any special skills when I joined. I'm willing to help. I have the time and I can do this. And I've learned everything since then. So we love to train. And that's actually most of what we do is training.
And, of course, Montana is the kind of state, as opposed to, say, Kansas, probably, mm-hmm. which is where I'm from, no knock on Kansas, where search and rescue are going to be called out often or more often than some places just because we're a state where people recreate outdoors.
Absolutely. And you know, I moved here from Illinois, so I know what the Midwest is like. But I always say in Illinois, I was the outlier because I would hike once in a while. And in Missoula, I'm the outlier because I don't hike every day. You know, and people are active out here, and we get visitors that come and visit, and tourists, and people that just don't know the area as well and don't know the hazards. But you know, most of the people we look for are Montana residents.
And experienced often.
It's not just. You know, you think of a couch potato who shouldn't be out in the woods. It's not just that person that we look for. It's, you know, bad things can happen to anyone at any time.
Give me an idea of the different kinds of searches and rescues you've been out on, because I'm sure they run the gamut.
They do. And in fact, some counties in Montana have specialized teams. You know, one team will do dives if there's somebody in the water. One team will, you know, they have a dog team. Some counties will have a ski team. In Missoula County, we all do a little bit of everything. We don't have enough of any single kind of rescue to specialize like that. But of course, we have some people that are more into skiing, and they take the lead on the ski rescues. Some people are more into hiking, and so on a ground search, they would be more active. But we really do a little bit of everything, all the way from. You know, we've done a search. We did a search a few years ago in Lolo for a child who just hadn't come home from school. And so we helped the sheriff's office go door to door just to see if he was at a friend's house, and eventually did find him at a friend's house. So that was great. All the way from that to, you know, we've done, like this weekend, we did that ski recovery. We do that a couple times a year. We look for lost hunters, lost hikers. We do, you know, as the sheriff or as part of the sheriff's office, you know, the sheriff is the coroner from Missoula County. If there's a body that he can't get to, maybe it's in the river or down a cliff or something, we have the equipment to do that. So we do body recoveries.
And, of course, you were involved in the avalanche recovery as well last Friday night. And that was, I'm sure, a first for you.
You know, that was a first for everybody. You know, when we all got on scene, I think there was even a discussion between the sheriff's department and the fire crews as to who takes command. You know, if it's a collapsed structure, obviously the fire crews have the training and the knowledge and the equipment to deal with that, where we have the training and the knowledge and the equipment to deal with an avalanche scene. So we, you know, nobody really had thought about ahead of time what we would do in that situation.
An in-town avalanche.
Yeah, an in-town avalanche. That's just, you know, we got a page that said avalanche at this address. You never get an address with an avalanche. It's always out in Lowell Pass somewhere, you know.
Right. Well, you were very busy, as you were saying, Friday night, because after you were finished with the avalanche recovery, you were called out on the 2 skiers who were missing, mm-hmm. who had skied out of bounds and snowball.
Right.
And they were thankfully found the next day and are recovering. But that incident prompted you to write a letter outlining some very good tips for people. And one of the tips that you thought that experience illustrated was that even though they were prepared to be caught in an avalanche, mm-hmm. they were not prepared for everything that could have happened to them, and they weren't prepared for what did happen to them.
Exactly. And you know, given what did happen and what they had, they did a great job of improvising. You know, they dug a snow cave, they got out of the elements, they used the equipment they had to make the best of their situation. I, you know, of course, get questions as chief of search and rescue about what could they have done better, and people ask me what our feelings are on the situation was. So I felt that, you know, there was a need to respond in the same venue in which those skiers issued their statement. And basically it's that they could have been better prepared. And a lot of us could be. You know, it's not just them. A lot of us don't carry everything that we should. But really it's not about carrying the kitchen sink. You don't need everything for every possible emergency. It's taking a few basic items and having the common sense to then improvise. You know, and those skiers improvised with what they had and made the best with what they had. They might have been a little more comfortable if they had had waterproof matches or a lighter, you know, very small things that can make a big difference. And so, you know, hikers refer to it as the 10 essentials. This list has been refined since the 1930s. And if you just Google for 10 essentials, it's a pretty good list of a fairly small number of light, small items that you can carry.
Right. It's not like you have to carry a 100-pound backpack.
Exactly. Nobody wants to do that.
Right. And they're not going to.
That. So it's just the 10 basic things that can really, really make a difference.
And those 10 essentials are listed at several websites, and you can go to Wikipedia or REI and
right.
get those 10 essentials. So we won't go into those. But the other point you made in your letter, which I thought was so good, was that the one thing you really need to do in these situations is use your brain and make good decisions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so once you realize you're in trouble, it's a little bit too late. But even at that point, you can stop and think. You know, and running around doesn't do any good. So stop, think about what your situation is, think about what you have available to you to help, and do the best you can. And you know, even before you get into that situation, that's really the best time to make good decisions. You know, most emergencies are not a single thing that went wrong. It's a series of decisions that lead you down a path that ends up in where you are.
And you made the point that sometimes people fall into what you call a trap of they're familiar with an area, so they think they know what they're doing. Like these two fellows, they had skied this particular area before.
Yeah.
But the trap they fell into was that conditions change.
Exactly. So the trail that they were on, they had been on before and seemed familiar, but Friday was different. There was a blizzard coming in. Avalanche conditions were elevated. Even if the blizzard hadn't hit yet, that means that the consequences of taking a wrong turn are much more dangerous, or they were on Friday than you know, the middle of the summer when you're not dealing with frostbite and 4 feet of snow. So I think, you know, any decision that you make in the backcountry, just think carefully about what you're doing and how things might be different today than they were a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
When people do get lost and search and rescue is called out, of course, the general public makes all kinds of judgments about what happened.
Right.
And usually, often anyway, I should say, the judgments are that the people were idiots, whatever they did to get themselves into trouble. But you don't view it that way.
Absolutely. And you know, we've done rescues for people who are very well experienced in the backcountry who just get injured. You know, sometimes we had one gentleman who tore his Achilles tendon and could not hike out. So we went and helped. And he knew what he was doing and he knew what the problem was and did everything he should have done. But he would not have made it out on his own. So we don't judge. And that's actually throughout the history of search and rescue. You know, the St. Bernard dogs come from the monastery at St. Bernard Pass. And I guess, you know, the monks used to get flack for helping smugglers when they were stuck. But their point was, we're just helping travelers. We don't care why they're traveling. We don't care what got them into the situation. Our role is to help them get out. And that's how we view it, too. Our role is to help people that need help.
Josh, you do wonderful work with County Search and Rescue. There are many of us who never know when we might need those services, that's for sure. And so we're very grateful that we have those available here in Montana. And I have been speaking with Joshua Herbold, who is chief of Missoula County Search and Rescue, about some of his tips for how to avoid getting in the situation where you need to be rescued. But if you do, he's there. And we're sure glad you are, Josh. Thank you.
And if I could add one point.
Sure.
All of this really is a team effort. You know, I was the one that wrote this letter just because I happen to be chief right now. But we do everything as a team. And even that avalanche on Friday was a true community team effort. And I think that really just drove home the point that this isn't an individual thing. It's not about me. It's not about any one of our members. It's about us working as a team and doing the best we can.
Give ourselves the best chance when we do that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide, there's a winter weather advisory in effect until 5 a.m. tomorrow above 5,000 feet for the West Glacier region, and a winter weather advisory in effect until 5 a.m. tomorrow for lower Clark Fork region in the Bitterroot and Sapphire Mountains. Tonight, rain showers are likely with scattered snow showers and lows in the mid-20s to lower 30s. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with scattered rain and snow and highs in the 40s. For central Montana, there's a winter weather advisory in effect until 5 a.m. tomorrow for elevations above 5,000 feet for the Rocky Mountain front. Tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies and snow in the western mountains and a slight chance of rain and snow everywhere else. Lows should be 10 to 25 degrees. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of snow through the day and highs 35 to 45 degrees. For southwest Montana tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies and a chance of rain and snow in the evening, lows 20 to 30 degrees with wind gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow and highs 35 to 45 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Jeff Weiss.
The members of the Montana Telecommunications Association, or MTA, want to ensure that Montana leads the way in broadband connectivity. MTA, therefore, is launching Connect Montana, an initiative whose goal is to deliver up to gigabit broadband speeds to our state's schools, libraries, and other community anchor institutions by 2020. We'll be working with our partners in the public sector and other key stakeholders to determine how much bandwidth we need, when, where, and at what cost. There's little doubt that an advanced broadband telecommunications network benefits people's lives in countless ways. We rely on the Internet for a host of time-saving and even life-saving services, from health care and public safety to government services, entertainment, and education, to name just a few of the areas where broadband connectivity makes our lives more productive and robust. A lot of attention is focused today on how broadband promises to enrich the learning environment at our schools and libraries. In this regard, President Obama announced an initiative to deliver ultra-high-speed internet connectivity to the nation's schools students over the next 5 years. His goal is to deliver 100 megabits of bandwidth per 1,000 students in the near term and to increase that to 1 gigabit per 1,000 students in 5 years. For those of you who may be unfamiliar with megabits and gigabits, suffice it to say that 100 megabits is a lot of bandwidth. 50 megabits usually is more than enough bandwidth to serve most large institutional broadband consumers today. Needless to say, 100 megs is twice as much as most large consumers use today, and a gigabit is 10 times more. However, as FCC Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel told a Montana audience last summer, we should shoot for the moon. The president and educators alike realize that broadband isn't by itself going to make Johnny or Jane any smarter. The Center for American Progress, for example, recently reported that technology alone will not revolutionize our nation's school system. We also have to address myriad other education issues, from teacher training to lengthening the school day and year. And John Harrington, CEO of Funds for Learning, a company that helps schools meet their broadband technology needs, notes in a recent Education Week article that for many schools, the broadband bottleneck is inside the schools themselves and not with the connection the schools have to the Internet. Similarly, Evan Marwell, CEO of Education Superhighway, a California nonprofit that's promoting higher bandwidth speeds at our nation's schools, advises schools to assess their needs for bandwidth and devices. Every school should have a plan, he says in the Education Week article. In short, we need to identify what we need, where we need it, and at what cost and when. We need not spend public or private resources on services for which there is little demand. However, on the other hand, we do need to devote resources where they are most demonstrably needed. So, what are we doing today to ensure that our schools, libraries, and anchor institutions have access to high-capacity broadband connectivity? Montana's rural broadband providers and the hundreds of Montanans they employ have deployed nearly 20,000 miles of fiber in our state. These companies invest nearly $75 million annually in capital expenditures. Nationally, according to the FCC, broadband deployment has grown at a phenomenal 17% compound annual rate from 2003 to 2012, the latest year in which data were collected. There are 60 million connections over 10 megabits as of year-end 2012. The number of 10 megabit connections grew 31% in 2013 alone, according to Akamai, an international cloud services provider. The U.S. has more than twice as many broadband connections as any other developed country in the world, according to the OECD. Japan, Korea, and others run far behind. And in Montana, we're already well on our way to reaching our Connect Montana gigabit goal. MTA's members currently deliver gigabit speeds on our backbone networks and to anchor institutions that request it. And we largely meet the president's broadband connectivity goals for schools and libraries when you account for average school sizes in Montana. Most, if not all, of our largest schools have connections capable of delivering 100 megs today, and our smaller schools proportionally can get the equivalent of 100 megs or more per 1,000 students. That is 10 megs per 100 students, 20 megs for 200 students, and so on. By leveraging our substantial telecommunications assets in Montana, we can create a virtuous cycle of broadband investment, deployment, and adoption. Increasing demand for broadband promotes more investment, which enables more innovative uses for broadband, which encourages more investment, and so on. Through Connect Montana, we'll work with public and private stakeholders to optimize our broadband infrastructure to deliver broadband connectivity at whatever speeds our end users can reasonably and affordably consume. This is Jeff Feist, General Manager of the Montana Telecommunications Association, where we're happy to announce Connect Montana is ready to deliver high-capacity broadband services to Montana's community anchor institutions.
Jeff Feist is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition, and the views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Connor tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.